Welcome to North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And tonight we'll have our usual cast of characters and talk some sports and some sports venues this evening, among other stuff. We welcome in Tim. Tim, how are you feeling, man? You had a tough time last week. How's it going now?
Yeah, I'm going to stay on my feet, Rick. I did a bit of an extended walk today, and my right knee is telling me I probably shouldn't have done it.
Oh, boy.
So, you know.
Well, a little ice, a little ibuprofen.
Yeah.
And that'll do it. Okay, Coach, we're going to have our usual cast of characters tonight. We'll get to that in a minute. The Super Bowl postings and times are up. They're on our website. They're in the middle of the week after Thanksgiving. I believe it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, somewhere along those lines. And the games are being played at, I think, 3, 5, and 8, something like that. We have them posted. We will be following St. John's Prep and, of course, Salem High School and Amesbury High School. And I'm pretty sure Bill will be going down to Gillette at least one, if not all three of those days. And I'm not sure about the rest of us, meaning Tim and me. Tim has his day job, and it's kind of weird, Tim, with the Super Bowl's being played, you know, during the week.
Yeah, I have a day job. You know, being retired is pretty much a full-time gig, you know.
Well, we'll see what the schedule, how it turns out, but I know Bill is planning to go down there at least one day, and as I said, maybe all three. And I'm not sure if I can get down there or not. I'm a little disappointed it's not on Saturday with all the teams playing at, you know, all the same time.
No, kind of whack. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The MIAA continues to act in strange and mysterious ways, so you never know what, you know, we don't know how much the decisions are being influenced by the schedule of availability of Gillette itself, but it's always been available on that day before. So.
Right. I don't know, but it's always fun. We always have a good time going down there, and even the week prior to, I remember the first time. Remember the first time you went down there to coach? I think it was a Tuesday afternoon when the kids went down for breakfast and stuff like that.
Yep.
Tuesday morning.
That was always a great time, and you know, I had a chance to interview several of the former Patriots. Drew Bledsoe spoke once to the kids. Who all came back? Mr. Kraft also spoke to them. I think Brewski spoke one year. Mm. I mean, this is an amazing lineup that, you know, they managed to get and make available to the captains and the cheerleaders and who were out the school seemingly brought along with them. I interviewed Andre Tippett the very first year, and to that point in time, I can't remember ever interviewing a larger man. I'm thinking, you know, how did you get up after getting hit by this guy? Oh, my God.
I know. It's just incredible how big he is. And football, NFL players in general, my goodness. And through a bit of a quirk, St. John's Prep will be playing Xaverian Brothers. They're rated 1 and 2 in Division 1, respectively. And they're playing their Thanksgiving Day game. They're rivals, so they'll be playing within 4 or 5 days of each other, two games. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And
you're definitely playing to send a message on the first one, and you know, if you win the first one, you feel like you definitely sent a message, and if you've lost, you've got some paybacking to do. So either way, that final game for the state title is going to be intense, to say the least.
Right, right. And how about Salem going to the Super Bowl for the first time? That's fantastic.
Oh, what a great story that is. So glad for the kids and the team and the coach. The school, they're going to be absolutely over the hill. You know, they had some rough patches 5, 6 years ago, and, you know, this freshman class has just come in and really developed under Coach Bashad. And what a fitting tribute to end their playing careers at Salem. And as a payback to the coach, it's that great thing. If they can walk away with a win and finish out their careers, what a great, great way.
Yeah, it's really tremendous. And for all the schools, we've got probably 20, 25 coaches that we've talked with for Thanksgiving Day games previews. and most of them are posted now. We'll be posting the rest of them tomorrow and probably before Wednesday, and talking with all the coaches from the Super Bowl and the championship teams, you know, league teams, all the way to the teams that only won one game. Every coach, every single coach loves his kids, his team, optimistic about the future and how the kids performed this year. And I know that includes Beverly High School. Jeff Hutton has had a tough time winning over there at Beverly. They finally won one, and now they've got a tough task against Salem coming up.
Yeah, you know, it's good to win the one before the Thanksgiving Day game. It gives you a bit of personal momentum. But as you say, that's a tough road to hoe, having to go in and face a team that's going to a Super Bowl where they're going to be looking to maintain the great run that they've been on. And so, you know, we'll see. You know, I mean, Beverly would love to spring an upset. We've seen them before.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. When you go into Thanksgiving, I don't know how many times there have been, Tim, when a last-place team has played a first-place team and the underdog has won on Thanksgiving. It's just been amazing. And I remember many years ago, Gloucester was heavily favored in Danvers at the end of the season, and Danvers pulled off the upset. I remember Classical doing it to English or English to Classical. And so it's great, and it's a tremendous tradition. You know, you coached elsewhere for a while, but what's your opinion of the Thanksgiving tradition?
When I went to Maryland, there was no Thanksgiving tradition. The teams were, the leagues were all done at the first week in November. When I first got down there, I remember asking, so who do you play on Thanksgiving? And they said, we don't play on Thanksgiving. And I'm like, how do you not? And Massachusetts, we've talked about it before, is one of those rare states where, you know, schools play in November and they have a Thanksgiving contest to wrap it up. And so it means just such a tremendous amount. I grew up in Lynn and West Lynn, and so even though I didn't go to high school there, even as a young kid before I went to high school, you still went down to the old Manning Bowl, one of the great facilities since the 1930s, to go in and play. It had 10,000-plus people. You could come in from both the east and the west entrances. And, you know, one side was West Lynn and the other side was East Lynn. And it was just, you know, mayhem on the field and off the field, underneath the stands, I've always said. But for all the other teams in the area, you had a traditional Thanksgiving Day foe that no matter what your season looked like, you always had Thanksgiving to look to, and if you won Thanksgiving, you won the season, you know, and it gave you bragging rights for an entire year, whether it was in your town like Lynn, and we had two rivalries because St. Mary's used to play Lynn Tech for many years, or if it was intercity rivalry. Peabody Everett was a long-time game, and so you had bragging rights within your league.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think a lot of that...
You know, you may not have won many, but you won the last one, and that's what matters.
Yeah, and that's a springboard to the next season for the underclassmen, too. So I think that tradition is being held up very nicely this year, and I think if you would, if our listeners would take a look at the coaches' interviews that we have posted already, you will see that, you'll hear that, you'll hear the enthusiasm. And we asked each coach, just as I asked Tim, to reflect on their memories of Thanksgiving Day football, whether it's as a coach, as a player, or as a fan. And the coaches I talk with, they answered all three. They have great memories as players, as coaches, and as fans. So it's there's some really interesting interviews that you ought to take a listen to if you have time up on the website. We talk with almost every single coach in the area, Cape Ann League, Northeast Conference, Catholic Conference, private schools. We got them all up there. And if they're not up there yet, they will be by Tuesday night. We've got a few more that we still have to post. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk sports venues with sports journalist Steve Krause. And then later on, at the bottom of the hour, we'll bring in our basketball insider, Mike Grenier, ask him the same thing about sports venues, and, of course, ask him what's going on with the Celtics. I heard some really weird stuff today on Boston Sports Radio. And I don't know if you heard it, Tim, but it's just... What's that?
Why do you listen? It only upsets you.
I keep trying to get interviews because I heard Tim Fox on the other day, and I was rolling. I had to pull the car over. I was laughing so much. Ty Law. Ty Law was on, and he was talking about, you don't have a Willie McGinest in the locker room right now. And he was saying, you know, when Willie was waiting at the door, you showed up late, he's going to whoop your ass, is the way Ty Law put it. And then he said, now you've got, Matthew Slater in there. And if you're late to the locker room now, Matthew Slater goes up to you and says, I'll pray for you. So
I would have had to be pulled over.
So. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, Ty Law just delivers it. It's so great. Oh, man. But anyway, we'll see what Mike's opinion is on the Celtics, but both Celtics Bruins doing pretty well right now. All right, let's take a break and see if I can get a hold of Steve and not lose Tim. You're listening to MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday evening here on MSO.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, Steve Krause is with us now, sports journalist, sports editor, news journalist, news editor, and all of the above. And Steve, welcome back. How are you doing?
Steve, you there, buddy?
Steve?
Good job, Rick.
Well, I had him. All right, hold on. We'll try it again. Steve, are you there? Steve? Okay, well, we lost the connection. Let's give it another shot. So here we go. We're going to try Steve again. Had him for a second. There we go. And here we go again. Got that.
Hello?
All right, Steve. Hold on. I got to get Mike on the line here. I'm sorry, Tim. I'm so confused. You're Steve. I'm Rick. I'm getting Tim on. I'll be right back, Steve.
Sounds like a plan.
Let's hope it works.
Yes, you connect me.
All right, this is what happens when my identity gets stolen. Steve, say hi to Tim.
What's up?
Timothy?
How are you, buddy?
Good, how are you?
Good.
All right, here we go. Yay, it worked this time. Oh, man. All right, so Steve Krause, sports journalist, news journalist, sports editor, news editor, everything else of all that good stuff. And Steve, we were just kicking around a little bit about Thanksgiving football, we also want to talk about sports venues tonight, and I know that among the three of you guys, including Mike Grenier, you have been to a lot of places, and I don't know if you have a favorite, either as a reporter, as a fan, high school, college, otherwise. I know you love the bean pot.
I suspect that Timmy and I might be on the same track on this one. If you're talking about sports venues and you include, you know, both local and national and everything like that, for my money, the best times I ever had were at the old Lynn Arena.
Oh, yeah.
And you laugh, Timmy, because you know I'm right.
I kept thinking about it today when I suggested this to Rick. It was the only place you had it. You walked in, we needed a flashlight when it was fully lit.
Yeah, I know. It was But, you know, it's just you get in there on a Saturday morning and you leave at 8 o'clock or whatever on a Saturday night, and you just saw so many hockey games, and it was really almost nonstop, because what they did in those days was that they would play a period, And then that those two teams would, you know, take their between periods rest. And while that was going on, they'd play another period, and then they'd clean off the ice, and then they'd two more periods, and they'd clean off the ice. So you actually got almost like two hockey games in one. And I really loved it. I went to St. John's, and St. John's played their home games there. But, I mean, I saw just about everybody. You know, on a Saturday afternoon, you could see all four Lynn teams. And it was just a marvelous place to go. And they had the gooeyest pizza I ever ate in my life. I mean, the cheese from there, you could string that cheese from the arena all the way to Wyoming Square. it was tremendous. And some of the best hot cocoa I ever had. I mean, it was just...
Yeah, but, you know, Steve, it was the only rink around for miles.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the thing. It was the only rink. You know, the Breakout had... Bobby Ewell hadn't been, wasn't playing yet, so Breakout hadn't been built. The arena up on Rue 1 in Saugus, that was still to come. There was nothing yeah. around except the Lynn Arena.
For miles and miles and miles. Yep. Everybody played there.
Well, they had to practice there, too.
They had what?
They had to practice there, too.
Oh, yeah. It was. I mean, I played on that ice once. It was at 3 o'clock in the morning when they would book, you know, scrubbers. And I couldn't skate, so they made me play goalie. And
yeah, but, you know, there was something about getting up with your buddies and meeting up for 3 o'clock in the morning scrimmage, so to speak. It was just something special. You know, it was what you did back then. If you were, you know, a kid just going into high school or in high school and you wanted to go and you wanted to play hockey, you pulled your money, you rented an hour, and down you went.
And you played, you know, you bleary-eyed. And, of course, I mean, for me, I think that our ice time was at 3 in the morning. And, of course, you try to get some sleep, go to bed a little earlier and try to get a little sleep before you have to get up and go. And, of course, you couldn't. I mean, just the anticipation of playing there would keep you up all night. And it was just one of those many, many things that I thought made it so much fun to be a kid. You know, and I also have a real soft spot in my heart for the old Manning Bowl. You know, I love the new one. I think the new one is great, but I love the old one. And my favorite memory of that place was that when I was a freshman in college, I started going out with a girl from English. And of course, was a West Lynn kid, so every time I ever went into that bowl for a Thanksgiving, I'd go in the front door and turn right, because that's where the classical side was. So now the two of us go into the bowl for a Thanksgiving Day game, I instinctively turn right, and she turns left. And all of a sudden, like, both of us, like, whoa, where'd the other one go, you know? And she won that fight, and I had to sit over with the English people. So,
and you just don't feel right, Steve, you know?
No. You know, it was a different side. The sun was brighter over there. You're sitting amongst English people rooting for English, and there I am. Don't forget, and Tim will back me up on this, When you were growing up, you never met East Lynn kids. It was line you didn't cross. So
kids today don't understand this. I met this this teacher a couple of years ago, and she said she was from Lynn, and I said, "Well, what's the East Lynn?" She goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "Well, when I was growing up, you were either from East Lynn or West Lynn."
Right.
I don't know. Oh, forget it. You have no idea.
Never the twain shall meet.
You know, Steve.
No. And of course, the best way you try to explain Western Avenue and Eastern Avenue to people and you have to try to convince them that they don't run parallel to each other. One runs north and south, the other runs east and west, and they go, huh?
And they intersect, or they don't actually intersect, but they meet. You know, Eastern Avenue goes on to Western Avenue. You were going to say something, Rick?
Yeah, my last visit to the Manning Bowl, the old bowl, Steve, that's when Dave Widmer passed away. And I was up in the broadcast portion of the press box that day. And he was a very nice young man, and I think that was one of his first games that he ever covered. And that's the thing that pops into my head about Manning Bowl. As many good experiences as we had there, that's the one that comes to mind.
Well, the complex it was built during the Depression along with Frazier Field. And for many years, both of those facilities were rated, the second best high school football field and baseball field in the state. Because the city back then took really good care of those facilities.
What was number one? I'm curious.
What would have been the number one football field?
High school football field in Massachusetts.
Well, I don't know about high school, but it would have been Harvard.
I think Manning Bowl was by far when we were kids, and you said that was very well maintained, and high school football was way more attended than it is now. I think it was by far the best.
You get in on a Saturday, especially Thanksgiving Day, you get 10,000 people in that place.
Yeah, they turn them away on Thanksgiving.
It was crazy. Because, Steve, just as an aside, for those of us that are old enough and of age, it wasn't a proper Thanksgiving morning unless somehow you made your way to the Shawmut.
The Shawmut, ooh. I just know that I lived way almost into Saugus growing up, and I'd walk down to Manning Bowl from my house, and that wasn't a short walk, so... and then my father would come get us.
Yeah.
And he was never too happy about it because we'd almost always be hosting our relatives from Connecticut. They had to entertain 2 hours of, where's Steven? Why did he go to a football game? Well, when we're coming, it was like, if you have to ask, it's not worth answering,
I made a couple of trips to the Shawmut, and I was a little late to the dinner bell myself.
Oh God, those were the days.
Weren't those the days, though? But I always tell Rick, when you went to Thanksgiving Day game between Classical and English, there was as much action under the stands as there was on the field.
I just know that I had this thing where, I liked watching the game, so I didn't hang around under the stands very much, but when I did it, back then they had the food, concession stand was down there, and I'd go get a hot chocolate or something at halftime, or go get a Coke or something. And there was always a fight, or there was always something else, and there was always some illicit activity going on, or, a couple of people in the throes of passion, if you want to call it that.
There were probably as many people coming over the fences on each side as there were actually going through the gates having paid.
And the police were always dragging some poor kid out because he was drunk at 10:30 in the morning. Good God. It was a different time,
It was
the place to be. Of course, they didn't have an evening game the night before. So if you were going to meet up with people, that's where you were going to go. Now, in later years when Tech and St. Mary's played on the night before, a lot of that reunioning went on at that night game, so that by the next morning it was just a football game. which I always like too. I liked any of that stuff. I'm very much into Linicano, I used to call it, yeah. Which is Americana, right, so, with Lin in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So in terms of baseball, so other football stadiums, there's really no other football facility of note that you can even talk about on the North Shore, you know,
no.
That we haven't spent any time at that was notable. Now, baseball...
Probably the only one that you might consider is Everett Stadium was pretty big, and,
yeah,
of course, the stadium in Lowell was pretty big, too.
Yeah, but that's kind of out of our area. You know, I wanted to do the North Shore, but ever had the concrete, you know, they tore it all down like Lynn did. But in terms of baseball fields, of course, legendary Frazier Field still in use, bit modernized, but the skeleton is still there. You know, the original builders would recognize it. You know, for what it was. And to think of all the names that played there, Harry Gannis having great both Manning Field and Frazier Field during his time at Lynn Classical.
Yeah. But,
I'm thinking, I always loved playing, and I never played there a whole lot, was Seaside Park in Marblehead. My dad used to take me over there to watch post-six play way back. And it was just such a cool place to go and watch a game. You know, the old wooden stands behind home plate and everything, and you're playing out towards Atlantic Avenue. It was really a cool place.
The only diamond I ever saw that was positioned so that it wasn't angled to one side. It was straight on. So when you drive down Atlantic Avenue and look at it, the diamond was straight on. I still like to go there to watch games.
Yeah, I do too. Always enjoy working over there.
I like that, and I, of course, I've been around a little bit more now, but I like that it wasn't probably there when we were kids, but I like the one in Danvers. That's kind of, Twy Park or whatever for it.
Yeah, Twy Field has accumulated, I think, a certain mystique because of success with Roger Day and the Danvers baseball team. Because of his career, that it just wasn't a place you wanted to go and play games.
No, it was like they had a pretty good home field advantage there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a place, and Tim, you're going to hate me for saying this, but the old, before they redid it and when it was in its heyday, is I was such a big Dick Geron fan. I mean, I always used to say, what a privilege it was to grow up watching Dick Geron. And anybody that never saw him or never met him or anything like that probably won't understand what I'm saying. But, you know, he wasn't just a good football player. He was history in the same way Harry Gannis was history. And what a privilege it was to grow up watching him play. So for that reason, I always liked going to Boxage Field.
Mm.
And it was he and Stan, you know, really stamped their names on that place to give it that kind of legendary status. And I remember reading a story one day, and it was a photo in the Lynn item years and years ago, of Dick Geron running down on the beach at Lynn Beach and the Hans Beach, running in the sand, and he was like the only kid doing that at that time, and of course he did it to strengthen his legs, strengthen his calves.
Right.
And then he went on to Yale, and he just had a fabulous career at Yale, and then went on to play football with the Detroit Lions as a defensive back, not as a running back.
Yeah. And he was coach of the
head
year.
Coach.
National Football League Coach of the Year. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that? And he got every bit of whatever talent was in him. He used and got out of him, and it was, I mean, he was just such a And the thing that's the best part about the whole thing is he's such a great person, you know, on top of everything else that you, you know, he was just, and I remember just being a sophomore, junior in high school, and I know I went to the prep, and we had Steve Harrison, and we always used to say Steve Harrison was just as good as Dick Girard. And I don't know, I don't think that there were too many people better than Dick Girard, but it was kind of strange for me because here we have this guy who's supposed to be just as good as Dick Girard, and I'm down at Blockage Field on Saturday afternoons watching Dick Girard because we played on Sundays. So, all of the aforementioned venues that we've mentioned, it just made it so much fun to be a kid.
Hey, Steve, we got to wrap it up, but before we do that, I have to ask you: Are you? Are you working Thanksgiving? Are you covering a game?
Oh, am I covering a game? I got to drag my butt all the way down to Westwood on Thanksgiving to cover the prep and Severian.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, you know, this is why you make the big bucks.
Yeah, it's also two undefeated teams and
fabulous.
They're gonna play twice in a week.
Yep. What a prequel to the Super Bowl, huh?
Because that Super Bowl's on a Wednesday night.
Yep.
Hey, Steve. The Krause family is still gonna be asking, where the hell is Steve?
Yeah, right.
It'll happen again. Yep, it happened.
Over some. I was there without me, folks. I'll catch up.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, Steve. Thanks for reminiscing with us, man.
To you too, Rick. Hopefully we'll see each other next Monday or talk to each other next Monday and compare notes.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Steve. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. That's Steve Krause, who was a sports journalist. Primarily with the item, but he's also a sports editor. He was a news editor and news writer and a news journalist. All right, Mike Grenier will be coming up next. He's our basketball insider. We'll see what he has to say about a venue or two. And I want to remind you that the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk will be dropping on Wednesday this week instead of Thursday. So look for that. And again, look for all of our previews with the Thanksgiving Day previews that are being posted as we speak. And, of course, the North Shore Sports Writers, the Salem News Sports Writers with Bill Newell, will be probably posted tomorrow morning. And that, of course, includes Phil Stacey, Nick Giannino, and Matt Williams. So lots of coverage here in sports on MSO. And we do news, too. Don't forget North Shore Today is our daily news magazine put together by Bill. And it's just, I think it's tremendous. We'll take a break, come back, and we'll have Mike Grenier with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, I actually pressed the right buttons this time for a change. Anyway, Mike Grenier is with us now. He's our basketball insider and, of course, another sports journalist famous here on the North Shore, primarily with the Salem News. Mike, how are you? Welcome back.
Good. It's very interesting hearing you guys talking about the various venues. And, of course, that I take those to heart because, you know, you mentioned Blockage Field and Manning Field. And, of course, the Salem News, we covered many a game there. And the great Stan Bondalevich at Blockage Field, how can you forget those days? And, you know, when Steve mentioned some great names, Dick Chiron, and, of course, you know, just so many memories of covering games in those North Shore venues.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask Steve and Tim and you, however we can fit this in, because I want to hear your favorite venue, but think about later on in terms of Thanksgiving coverage, because for more than 30 years, I would leave the house at 7:30 on Thanksgiving morning, leave my wife behind, leave the kids behind, and I'd show up at 1:30, and, you know, the family would be there ready to eat, and I didn't have to do anything except clean the dishes. So, you know, it's just quite a tradition. It's very unique, I think. But let's go back to the venue thing, Mike, and then we can talk other stuff later.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you want to, let's start with the high school stuff, because, you know, Ron, that sort of we have that train of thought going. And for me, at covering games for the Salem News, I would often be either at Heard Field in Beverly or one of my favorite spots, Bertram Field in Salem, for that long-standing tradition, Beverly versus Salem. They've now played like 120 years or whatever it is. And I remember Phil Stacy and myself covering the 100th game between Beverly and Salem. So Bertram Field was definitely a special place on Thanksgiving morning. Even on regular Friday night games, they played a lot of Friday night games when Ken Perrone was coaching there and all that. But it was a particularly special place on Thanksgiving, playing against Beverly High School there. And, you know, at the time, Salem had so many great teams. Beverly had so many great teams, and there was often a lot at stake, whether it be the Northeastern Conference Championship or just pride. You know, that's an old, sounds like a cliche, but it's true. There's a lot of pride at stake, no matter if Salem was 7-2 and Beverly was 2-7. So Bertram Field, for me, I mean, Hurt Stadium was also great, but I think Bertram just had a little bit more character, and getting there on Thanksgiving morning, and people would somehow be tailgating or having a couple of nips, you know, in the parking lot. And then
they didn't do that in Salem, what? Mike. Come on.
A couple of nips. But I saw many a great, you know, I was fortunate enough to cover many a great Salem-Beverly Thanksgiving Day. I know Manning Field has tremendous history, a phenomenal venue and all that, and you had two Lynn teams playing. But for our coverage area, it was all about, not all about, because you guys also had Marblehead playing Swampscott in various games, the prep playing Zavarian and all that. But Salem versus Beverly, and of course that tradition continues. They played like 115, 120 years now, you know?
Yeah, you know, Mike, we've mentioned, you know, a bunch of fields, and Steve also brought up Everett. There was just something about concrete stands, you know, the old stone stands. It's like Barry Park and Lynn. With that long concrete stand down the third baseline that ran the entire length of the street, it gave them such personality. You know, it's just not wooden stands or metal stands that are cold, you know, and impersonal. You know, the concrete stands and the cement stands that they built during the Depression, under the PWA, the WPA, the CCC, they were meant to last a long time. There was a sense of permanence.
Oh yeah,
with all of those stadiums, and they were around for a long time.
Yep. Yeah, and Tim, you know what? Just you talking about that gives me a little bit of chills, because right where I live here in the Merrimack Valley, when I was a grade school kid, grammar school kid, and we had just moved from the state of Maine to the state of Massachusetts, the Lawrence versus Lowell rivalry was huge. And both stadiums, as a matter of fact, Lawrence Stadium is less than a quarter of a mile from me here. And the Lawrence-Lowell game on Thanksgiving, those were two big high schools, Tim, and the Division I type schools. And those were both concrete fortresses, okay? And as a little kid, you were in awe of entering that stadium on Thanksgiving Day. And in those days, like Steve alluded to, when they would draw big crowds at high school games, the Lawrence Lowell game would draw like 15 to 17,000 people. And you'd walk in there as a 9 or 10 or 11 or 12-year-old kid, and that made quite a strong impression on you. And you know, it's just... And people took sides. Obviously, the Lowell crowd was there in big support for their team, and the Lawrence people here, where I live right here in Lawrence, you know, they would turn out for their team. And you had a massive crowd on Thanksgiving Day, and no parking, and you had to walk. And a funny thing that was mentioned about, I think Steve mentioned about jumping. We used to jump the fence at Lawrence Stadium when we were in grammar school, and it was a pretty tall fence, and there would be police on their motorcycles in the interior of the stadium. And they would chase kids, like, either away or try to grab a couple. But while they were grabbing one or two kids, 30 other kids would jump the fence and get in for free, you know? But not so much. Yeah?
those fences were never really that high. We were really young, and we weren't tall yet.
Exactly, exactly. But for me, those concrete stadiums that you mentioned, both Lawrence and Lowell, Cauley Memorial Stadium and Lawrence Stadium, Veterans Stadium here in Lawrence. Yeah. And, Rick, you've probably covered games here, I would say. Probably,
I have not. Right? I have not. The boys have. My favorite place up there is the Saugus Arena.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
Listen, I've got to step away from the mic for a second. You guys keep it going.
Sure. Okay. But Tim, those concrete stadiums, I love those as a kid. And I even remember going to, get this, Tim, the Patriots rookies played against the Jets rookies one year right at Lawrence Stadium, and it got good pregame publicity. It was in August. It was the month of August. But the place sold out. It banged out. It probably cost $4 or $5 to get in. But as a teenager, you felt you were seeing a real NFL game, even if it was just the rookies from both teams.
If you're not of our age, and if you're not of the generations that grew up going to these kind of places, you can only look at the pictures and wondering, oh, what's the big thing about it? It was the atmosphere that was generated by those buildings, you know? And it didn't matter if your team was having a good year or a bad year. It was the place. The place made the game.
No doubt. You know? No doubt.
You talk to the old-timers in Lynn and around Lynn, and you go, not Manning Field, you go Manning Bowl.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, everybody starts having flashbacks of watching Harry again. So the really good St. Mary's teams and the really good classical Lynn English teams, the battles on Thanksgiving Day. And it was like, the old Jamboree that they used to have.
Oh, yeah, the Jamboree. I cover many of them. It'd be like there'd be five or six scrimmages on a Friday night, many a time at Manning Bowl, and I would get sent there by the Salem News, and there would be five or six scrimmages, or four or five, something like that, and you got a real start to the football season by going to that Jamboree. And there's no such thing anymore, I don't think, but my goodness, to me, I love that it was a potpourri of games, and you saw like 10 North Shore teams playing on a Friday night, you know? That was awesome.
You know, and they also used to have the Drum and Bugle Corps World Championships at the Manning Bowl.
Yep.
And they used to pack that place out for that.
Well, and you know what? They have the same thing here in Lawrence. They've had many Drum and Bugle Corps competitions. Sometimes we hear them in the summer right from my home here. And they're practicing or warming up, or they have a couple of days of practice before the competitions. And, there would be many Drum and Bugle Corps competitions right here in Lawrence. And my dad, my brother would go, and I would go as a little kid. And it was a cool thing to go to those concrete stadiums because they could. And you know what's great, Tim, too, I think, and you probably agree with it, going along with those Thanksgiving Day games in those venues was the build-up in the newspapers on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, where you could read about, the Lynn Classical versus Lynn English game, or the Salem versus Beverly game, or Marblehead versus Swamp. The build-up that you would have on a Monday, a Tuesday, and a Wednesday in the newspaper kind of made you salivate for the game Thursday morning at 10 a.m., It just kind of it gave you that flavor the entire week before you attended a game on Thursday.
Exactly. And remember, too, Mike, all of the cartoons that appeared in the sports pages of the players and the coaches and all that preview that went along with the stories. I mean, it was just such a, like you said, a dramatic buildup leading to the game itself, the cartoonists were the photographers of the day, and just this classic caricatures of the players.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, we're at the Salem News, Tim, and you'll remember this. We were fortunate to have Phil Bissell of Rockport.
Right, he was who I was thinking of when you said that.
And, of course, he ended up doing the original Patriots logo, which I still love far more than the newer logo. Phil Bissell just was a master at doing cartoons of high school athletes for the Salem News, but also, too, was well-remembered still to this day for designing the original Patriot, Pat Patriot.
Mm. All right, let me ask you now, if I could, guys. I always want to know about your critique of the Celtics since last we talked. You had them at number two in your Power Five. Is it okay to talk Celtics?
Yeah, well, you know what, though, Rick? Let me just... We were talking about venues. I'm kind of excited about this, but if I can extend it a little bit, because I was thinking about it once you proposed that subject, and Tim and Rick, you may want to bounce a couple of ideas off me, but fortunately I've been able to go out to different stadiums or either on vacation or on assignment, and three or four places I want to mention that were sort of, you know, not high school stadiums, but more on the college and pro level. Probably my favorite venue of all time is Notre Dame Stadium.
Yeah, we know that. You've made that clear.
Days of Arab Passage, and to be able to watch a game there on any weekend, and all the traditions that are packed into that school weekend with the band playing in the different buildings, the morning of the game, the players walking through the line of people on the sidewalk waiting for them as they enter the stadium. My older brother was once with an ex-Notre Dame player on the field as the players, you know, ran out from the tunnel onto the field, and I was at that game. So to me, simply because I've been following Notre Dame for like 55 years or whatever it is, always a great place to go. But there are others. I've been to the Big House, Michigan, in Ann Arbor, and it holds 110,000 people. And Tim, the great thing about that place is no matter where you sit, even though it holds, it's a great seat. You have a great vantage point, and when you enter the stadium on the street level, You're already halfway into the stands. In other words, like, it's built sort of below ground up. So therefore, when you enter a street level, you're like maybe, you know, halfway up the stairs of the stadium. So it's a phenomenally intimate venue, even though it's got 110,000 people. It's a great place to watch a game. And another great place that we've been to, my wife and I, is we're Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And where North Carolina plays basketball. It's called, obviously, in honor of Dean Smith now. It's like the Dean Smith Dome or whatever it's called. And you have that beautiful teal, what was that color, blue color that they have. It's a phenomenal, it's a beautiful building, and I could just picture yourself there with 19,000 people watching North Carolina play Duke or anybody from the ACC. Absolutely a great, great building to watch a game. And Rick, I got to mention this other stadium on a pro baseball level, and no, it's not Fenway Park. My wife, Eileen, we went there two or three times in the last 10 years, PNC Park in Pittsburgh, where the Pittsburgh Pirates play. Mm-hmm. They're a very ordinary team, obviously, but it's situated where the confluence of the three rivers, okay, in Pittsburgh. And when you buy a seat and you sit, let's say, in the stadium level, at the upper level, you have a beautiful view of the bridges that cross over into the stadium. You have a beautiful view of the game. It's just a great place on a summer night to hang out two and a half, three hours and watch a baseball game, because it's just a comfortable place to watch a game. It's a gorgeous place to watch a baseball game. So I wanted to get those things out of the way.
Oh, no, that's good. I appreciate that. Tim, do you have any like that?
I'm not quite as well-traveled as Mike, but I did have the occasion to go to the Astrodome and see the Astros play, though it took me a week and developing my pictures to remember who they played that day. for rather obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when they were the Houston Colt 45s.
Yes.
Yeah. I also had the occasion to go to the old Memorial Stadium in Baltimore and sitting in the upper deck, and I was the only person sitting in the section.
Now, was that for baseball, Tim, or the old, you know, obviously the old Baltimore Colts with Johnny Unitas played there? Just, you know, even though it was a baseball stadium and you had the infield dirt there, they made a lot of history playing in Memorial Stadium.
Yep, no, it was to see the Orioles.
Uh-huh. But great place to watch the Orioles, especially those teams of the 1960s, right, with Jimmy Palmer and Mike Cuellar and Mark Belanger and Brooks Robinson and Frank Robinson, right?
One of the greatest teams ever assembled. You kidding me? My God.
Yep.
Paul Blair and Belanger. Oh, my God. Just, you know, name after name. We still recite them like we're watching them today. And they were always my second favorite.
Well, I'm gonna mention one you guys probably have never heard of, but when I went to UMass, Dr. J, my senior year, Dr. J was a sophomore out there, and he played the gym, and it was a gym. It wasn't the place that you have now. It was called the Cage. And
oh, the Cage, yes.
And that was one of my favorite spots because you're sitting on top of the court wherever you are. And to watch Dr. J in those days, you knew he was going to be something special.
No doubt about it, Rick. And you know, a place that's a little bit bigger than the Cage that I had the pleasure of going to, not for a game, but during the NCAA Final Four in Indianapolis, made a side trip over to the Hinkle Fieldhouse, where Brad Stevens' Butler University team played. And, of course, the site of the movie The Hoosiers, that's where some of it was filmed.
Ah, cool.
Hinkle
Very cool.
Fieldhouse, it looks like an old barn, and it you can just picture kids playing there in the 1950s for the state championship. You know, kids from Indiana, the Indiana State Championship. It's probably seats about 7,000, so it's not one of those 18,000 seat venues where you get lost. Every seat was a good seat, and they actually allowed us to go onto the court and shoot hoops out there during the Final Four. You just could enter the building, and there were basketballs all around, and you could shoot around right on the Hinkle Fieldhouse, which, The Hoosiers, one of the most famous sports movies of all time.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. How many different venues have you been to, do you think, between college and pros?
Oh, quite a few, Rick. And you know what? I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, Timmy, you would love this, and Rick, you too, Dodger Stadium. What a great place to watch a baseball game. Now, actually, my wife and I, first time I was there was 1976. I remember to this day. And it was like a little booth where you bought the tickets, right? And the guy, we had never been there, so we said to him, what's a good place to sit at Dodger Stadium? He says, I'm going to give you two seats upstairs because when you're in the upstairs, you can see the mountains looming beyond the outfield.
Wow.
And it was just gorgeous, despite the smog, even in the 1970s. It was a wonderful place to watch baseball, and to this day it still is. And Tim, 10 years after that first visit, I was working for the Salem News and got to cover John Tudor pitching against the Dodgers when he was with the St. Louis Cardinals in a playoff game there. And it brought back memories 10 years later of our first visit to Dodger Stadium. But that's a magnificent venue to watch baseball. It's just, now it's one of the oldest stadiums, obviously, but it retains that charm, and it's just a great place to watch a baseball game.
Yeah, like I said, it's been around for so long, and if you're any kind of baseball fan, all you got to do is say Chavez Ravine, and you know who you're talking about. You know?
Right.
And it also brings back, the memories of the guys that played there, Koufax and Drysdale.
Oh, yeah.
And Walter Alston and Tommy Lasorda. It's like, oh my God.
So much history there. Yep. Great places to watch a game. So those are just some of the places. I mean, and Tim, how can we not, and Rick, how can we mention venues without mentioning the old Boston Garden? I'm talking about the one prior to the Fleet Center.
Well, do you remember, I know that I was lucky enough to go to a few games with Bill Newell, and remember where the press sat in those games?
Yes.
on the court, under the baskets.
Behind the basket.
And yes.
The thing that we remember, of course, is how uncomfortable the building was during Celtics playoff games in May and June.
Well, yeah.
With no air conditioning. It was hot. And, of course, we have great memories of the 1980s. And for myself, the 1976 triple overtime game against the Phoenix Suns, and the place was steaming hot, and people were probably passing out all over the building, but the Celtics had a distinct advantage because they were used to playing in a hot, steamy building, the Garden, the old Garden. Certainly Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, we all remember him wearing an oxygen mask, and Pat Riley being ticked off because the showers didn't work and all that stuff. I mean, there were so many. And the floor had dead spots and all that stuff. That was a historically great venue.
Well,
To watch playoff basketball.
Bill and I did a hockey game there one time from from where Johnny Most or Bob Wilson. Now, do you remember that overhang? It was just a metal overhang where you could barely fit a metal chair there. You know, Johnny Most called it high above courtside. Well, you weren't that high up, believe me. Not like the ninth floor.
Great vantage point, right?
It was great. But what people don't know is you're sitting in a metal chair. You've got a tiny, tiny little place to write, and there are all these TV cables under your feet, so you can't get comfortable putting your feet down. Though you couldn't even stand up.
That's right. What a beautiful vantage point. I actually remember sitting next to Chick Hearn, who was the Lakers version of Johnny Most, in a playoff game. Had to be in the 70s or 80s. And he was, like you said, because it was so cramped, he was literally like 2 feet away from me or 3 feet away. And he got to chatting before. He was as nice a human being as I've ever met, even though he favored the Lakers the way Johnny Most favored the Celtics. And he had that great radio voice and that great radio presence. And Chick Hearn at the Boston Garden, that's one of my fondest memories of covering the Celtics because he was an institution in the L.A. area.
Absolutely. I have a friend who was at a game one time, and he was in an elevator with Gil Santos, and it was they had these fans that they were giving away, and he asked Gil Santos for an autograph for me. He said my buddy's a broadcaster, and he loves whatever it was. And Santos says, "Well, he's not having my job. he's not getting my job."
That's great. You know, and of course, it's great to meet those people. Just interacting on a normal nightly basis, you know, you'd run into Bob Wilson or you'd run into Johnny Most.
I did meet Johnny Most. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I did. Remember, he put out a record and he signed it at the Garden. I remember that, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And, of course, when I was in college, Rick, we saw Bobby Orr play there at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how can you not have fond memories of being anywhere in the Garden when Bobby Orr and Phil Esposito and that entire team was playing? It was just a great to be there on a Thursday night or whatever night of the week you were. To be in the Boston Garden to see those old Bruins play, the Big Bad Bruins, was an awesome thing. Right, Tim?
Yes, Tim. You know, just the guys, just to walk around in the Garden, there were just certain peculiarities with the Garden.
Yeah.
Well, how about seeing the rats up in the rafters? Remember seeing them? Tim?
Oh, yeah.
Tim?
When we were in college, my wife, Eileen, and I, before we got married, we bought a Celtics half-season ticket plan. First row of the second balcony, Rick. And you remember what the second balcony, that was way upstairs.
Oh, yeah, the gallery gods.
At first row of the second balcony, and it was like a half-season plan. You had 20 games. And the total price for the 20 games was $40. $2 per game, and we're dead center court, high above courtside, and, you know, that's how we kind of fell in love with watching the Celtics on a regular basis.
Well, I'm wondering if you have a trophy room. I wonder if Tim does, too, because all of you must have an amazing amount of memorabilia.
I do, actually, I've been a collector my whole life anyway, but also, yes, by attending these venues, you want to take something home with you, or you acquire it later because you have such great memories of being in those. Of course, having been like Gary Larrabee, my former colleague at the Salem News, we've been to so many venues because of the playoffs, Celtics playoffs and all that, that you cherish those. The old Chicago Bulls building was a great place to watch a game, Chicago Stadium. The Omni in Atlanta was the older building where the Hawks played with it. So, and the Houston, when the Celtics beat the Rockets a couple of times. You just take those things home with you. You kind of remember the big games and the big nights and how the opposing crowd was if you were on the road. I feel blessed to have been to so many venues.
Mm. Tim, do you have...
I haven't had the opportunity to travel as much as Mike did because, you know, he had the perfect job for attending all of these locations, but yeah, you certainly, you know, absorb and you take in all the uniqueness of all the venues. The Astrodome was just, you know, incredible.
A massive place, right, Tim? I remember it as a monstrously big place.
You know, not only from the outside. But you get inside and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
The place was monstrous, you know? Yeah. And again, and you go to these places knowing that the history of the players that were on the field or on the court, and you think of that and you think, wow, this is really cool. Like, this is where these guys play, you know? And, I remember back, being a kid in grammar school and rushing home for the 4 o'clock start of the World Series between the O's and the Dodgers, and it was, Mike Palmer versus Sandy Koufax. It was like, God, is it getting any better?
Right, exactly. And Rick, how about this one? The Philadelphia Spectrum and Dave Zinkoff doing the public address announcing, against the Celtics. I mean, Dave Zinkoff hated the Celtics, and he was the public address announcer.
Well, how about Kate Smith singing God Bless America?
Oh, yeah, but the Spectrum on playoff games was a spectacular place to cover a game, and Zinkoff used to purposely mispronounce John Havlicek's name. He called him Havlicek.
Oh, God.
And he gave that subdued tone when the Celtics scored a basket. But when, a 76er would score a basket, he would go nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just have great memories of being in those buildings, you know?
That's great. Okay, boys, we got a lot of sports on tonight. Tim, what's your pick tonight? Who are you going to watch?
I've already been channel surfing between the Celts game and the Bruins. The Bruins are tied, and the Celts were winning by a dozen. And but when you get the Eagles in Kansas City, So it's going to be a lot of thumb exercise.
There you go.
Absolutely. And Tim, I don't think we have to bother with Taylor Swift tonight. I believe she's in South America.
Oh, God, yeah. Thank goodness.
So, we won't have to put up...
She canceled her show in Brazil.
Right, because someone... this is tragic. A 23-year-old died because they have had extraordinarily hot temperatures there. And
right.
It's like they weren't passing water... They weren't giving water to people entering the stadium, and the kid was 23 years old, and a young lady, as I recall, 23 years old.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible thing that happened there.
All right, boys, it's great reminiscing with you guys tonight. Thank you for your memories. Mike, I'm planning on doing a program next Monday, and maybe we'll just kind of go back to the basketball talk.
Sure.
Because I want to get caught up on that. I have a lot of questions about, especially what the Celtics are doing. But in the meantime, have a great week and happy Thanksgiving to you and Eileen.
Oh, yeah. This for both of you, I feel the same. Obviously, it's always great to be on this show and to be with you two guys talking sports or anything. And I want to wish you and your families, both of you, an extraordinarily good Thanksgiving,
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael, and to you and your family as well.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Mike, we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
All right.
That is Mike Grenier, who is a sports journalist, primarily with the Salem News, but doing some freelancing as well. And, wow, we just took a tour around the country. That was awesome.